Okay. My name's Mike O'Connor. I run my own company called OEG Australia, and we'll get into what is Voyage Linux. Voyage Linux is, a Debian-derived distribution designed for not truly embedded, but small micros based on i386 platforms. It uses a read-only file system with TempFS for volatile data, and can be used and abused to do some very interesting other things, and we'll talk about that further. It uses parts of the file system symbolically linked from the read-only file system to a structure done under a directory called RW, which is TempFS mounted, and at boot time the RO is copied to the RW, allowing for a system that's non-volatile, and if anything goes wrong, you haven't lost the data that's that booted the machine in the first place. And you know, your only time it's in read write is when you're doing maintenance, upgrading packages, those sorts of things. Obviously, I need to have the mouse over here. Installation is reasonably simple. As of the version that's mentioned there, we have a live CD-ROM, so you just simply plug the CD-ROM, boot the machine, make certain you've got a USB CF. If you're plugging into a machine that needs CF, you plug it into that and go through the process there of basically formatting and then running this script, which is asks you a number of questions to do with whether it's a RAP platform or an ALEX platform or whatever it might be, depending on, of course, whether you need a console or don't need a console, because a lot of this hardware doesn't even have a VGA port, so it's all through the serial port. And once you've answered those questions, it will copy the content of the operating system on it, and then you take that out and plug it into your RAP, and off you go. That's the simple method, one method. We use a different method. I don't want to have to be booting a machine all the time and copying things on the flash modules and all those sorts of things. So we keep pre-built Voyage platforms on an rsync server, and we'll actually boot the machines. And because we don't generally deal with the actual console-based ones, we can just pop an OPIX live CD-ROM or whatever and then rsync it in there and reboot. You know, it's a much shorter process for us. And yeah, basic idea. Make certain you when you do these sorts of things, you use the numeric IDs in rsync, or you'll end up with an interesting mess with your file permissions and those sorts of things. And you just put grub on it, and you're in business. What's it used for? Firewalls, VPN concentrators, small format embedded. So you're doing, I don't know, monitoring something, and you want to gather the data and send it off across a network connection. A lot of these things will have USB slots. Some of them will have PCI slots, which means you can plug in all sorts of data gathering devices and those sorts of things. Application servers. That's what we use it for. We use a device like this, which is actually an IDE flash device. You plug it directly into the motherboard. We load the operating system onto that flash device. The machine boots. And depending on whether you need hard drives or you're going to use remote network storage, this is configured for that purpose. We strip out all the wireless, use our own custom kernel that might have the support for whatever we need to support. We quite often use a thing called vServers, which is a Linux jail system. Very, very useful, very good for Linux platforms. And of course, its main purpose is being a wireless router, so it has. They do a lot of work. The gentleman who actually implemented it, called Punky, I don't know his real name, out of Hong Kong, does a lot of work to make certain that the latest Athros drivers are in the kernel and all those sorts of things. A lot of the packages, I actually should have mentioned that, a lot of the packages have been specially rebuilt to remove dependencies because, of course, you're looking for a much cut-down machine. It fits in about 128 meg with headroom, so there's maybe 20 or 30 meg in that, which means you allow you to do an upgrade, those sorts of things, and have some room to store it in. What else? We've used it in projects out in wool stores, as I say, as a router for so that we can do remote management of PLCs and these sorts of things. And of course, in the data centers, we use it for application service. That's basically it. I can do a demonstration if you really want me to, or I could show you the types of boards it goes onto. That sort of thing. Go ahead. No, because it's read-only. We're never writing to that platform except for the upgrade purposes. I have on one platform where we used it as a router as part of a layer 7 packet filter. I was logging some information to the flash is on a little separate partition that ran for 3 years without any problems. And that was basically would have been writing, well, close enough to writing every single time a user logged on and logged off on a 6,000 or 7,000 user ISP. So, you know. Right, writing and rewriting it. It wasn't the best thing, but at the time I didn't have a spare 2.5-inch hard drive, so I did it that way. It never caused us a problem. These devices in particular, which we use for those sorts of things, they do wear leveling and those sorts of things. So, yeah, it's part of that process. Well, this one's a 256. They'll go up to 2 gig in this format, and then they've just released a SATA version of the same device, so it has a small SATA connector here instead of a 40-pin connector, and they'll go up to, I think it's 8 or 16 gig. Well, this one here, when I stopped buying a 256 in this format, was about $65, $70. The 1 gig in the SATAs are about $120 or so. You know, you can get them in a wide temperature version, negative 70, positive, whatever the number is, which is quite impressive. Yeah, PQI, quite a nice product. Fairly hard to get hold of. I buy them directly from the importer.
How would you compare this to something like Dan Smallwood?
Well, sure, Dan Smallwood is much smaller. The thing is, it's not an upgradable platform in any of the ways, in any shape or form. I can install any Debian package. In fact, the one thing we did do, we bought a 512 of this, put an X server on it. Daryl here wrote some Python code, and we did a whole video, single-frame video capture with I/O interface, which would take pictures of bales of wool and progress them through the system, and that was all based on this system, and it just sits out there, and it's been out there now. It'd be 2 years at least, maybe longer. So, yeah, app will work absolutely. We don't normally, of course, you don't normally have an X server, so you just run the command line apt. The only thing you have to do is, because of this RWRO type of thing, is you install a package, you then have a look at the package and see, okay, that's created a volatile storage area. I need to either recreate those directories in the RO process, or I need to do some symbolic linking to make certain that we're not going to end up with a boot problem.
Has there been some work to use UniFS to get rid of all
this? I spoke with... I actually provide the mirror and everything in Australia for Punky, and I spoke in length about that one. The biggest problem with it is we can't selectively save just what we want. If you want to save a change, you've got to change the lot, and that just doesn't work. So unless there was a version change where you could selectively say that file or this directory tree, it's not going to be a viable solution. So this method works really well because of the fact that you need to be able to upgrade it and you need to be able to, yeah.
So and if you have UniFS, then you can have the read-only process and overlay every write on top of it?
Oh, yes, absolutely. But what happens when you want to do an upgrade?
Like with OpenWRT, you can sort of do that.
Yes, and that'd be great, but of course the problem is most of these platforms have CF. CF is not compatible with, say, JFS2. It'd be great if there was an IDE version of JFS2. That would overcome all these problems in the long term. You would just simply take a few couple of directories, bind, mount those, and then for read-write purposes, and then you'd be great. But unfortunately, that's not a viable platform in this particular case. Depends. Yes, the proxy server is your problem. But of course, think about it. If you have a hard drive and you actually kind of store data, yes, you've got a problem. But why do you have to have the whole operating system on the hard drive that's prone to failure? This is what we do with our vServer stuff. We will boot the machine on flash. We will then mount a file system, either remote or local. We will then start up vServers on those hard drives. If the machine plays up, it's either going to go bang, because libATA is giving you some problems, or whatever. But the point is, you can ring somebody up, you can get the remote hands to pull a hard drive, whatever, reboot the machine, she comes back up again, because you haven't lost anything. The hard drive's there and it does its job. Apt-get install. Yep, absolutely. The only thing, as I say, is you do need to look at what directory systems changes have been made when you installed it, and does that mean that you need to do some playing with the RORW process? And that's just a case of working that one through. Well, that's right. I've had a couple of conversations in the past with certain people, but it's not going to go anywhere because it's such a small market, as always. Well, there's any number of platforms for that purposes. I've done one or two co-raid-based Ethernet over ATA. NFS is great as well. Roll your own in the sense of build your own NAS type stuff. A lot of different things like that. I'd love if there was a file system along the lines of the Suns. Was it Suns XFS for Linux? We hit the problems of file system issues all the time with making systems bigger and all those sorts of things. It just drives us up a wall. And I just wish we had a file system like that for Linux. Oh, yeah, with XFS doesn't even have that concept. You just plunk another hard drive in and it just works. But, yes. I suppose, I don't know how many people have seen these, but these are actually a superseded, but it's basically the same in the newer versions of them. This here is a... It's been left on. Okay. Right, this here is a... what's called a wrap. It's a geode 266 or a 333. Has 128 mega RAM. No VGA, just serial. They use a custom BIOS written by some guy in Switzerland, I think. They've been the mainstay of all the guys out there that are doing wireless deployments for sort of the cheaper side of the market, unless you're going to go commercial. Pardon? It's a geode, which is basically AMD in this case. I386. Is it six? I didn't think it. Is it six? Yeah, well, it doesn't matter. Basically, not that fast, but they do the job. you can get them in models that have one Ethernet, PoE, two Ethernets, two mini PCIs, one Ethernet, all these sorts of things. There's a new version out of these which uses a VIA chipset, is it? I think the Alex. It's called an Alex. Is it still geo? Right. Yeah, I can't remember. They're about $240 a pop from a company in Sydney called Yarrawarra. Melbourne, are they? Are they Melbourne? Okay, right. That's right, you're right. They're in Melbourne. Oh, yeah. Yes, they have a CO slot. It's a 512, you know. We put all sorts of different things on them. I've used these as failover Linux routers for ADSL connections, somebody who's really concerned about being able to get to their online app. So you'll have two ADSLs from two ADSL 2 providers who are running their own networks, and you'll have the internal and one Ethernet per ADSL, PPPoE, two PPP sessions, and a higher metric on one of the routes. and, you know, one's a treat. 12 volt, 1 amp or so. That's the base platform for them. But as I say, I haven't done a huge amount with these. We've done different things with them. But the big thing we do is actually use them as part of our application service to make a more reliable platform on a cheap on cheap dollars. That's the big thing. You know, you might have two or three servers in our case in Canberra, you know, the hard drive dies, machine falls over. You want to be able to have them turn it back on again and be able to get into it, find out what's wrong with it, and then get them to replace the hard drives or whatever might be appropriate. And you just can't do that tidily when you're dealing with an operating system that's not there anymore because the hard drive's playing up. Whereas this makes it, the operating system will be there, unless you've got a total hardware failure, which is a recoverable situation as well in that sense. So, yeah. Anything else? Yeah. I can. It's going to take a bit of work. Have we got enough time for that or not?
We've got plenty of time. This is basically the last session.
Okay. Well, Daryl, do you want to bring up a... you didn't move the crossover cable, did you? What I can do is instead of actually installing on this hardware, I'll demonstrate a vServer I have back in Adelaide. I'll actually show you the machine and all those sorts of things. Would that be appropriate? Okay. What am I going to do here? Big enough? Cool. I'll show you my personal machine. So, what we see here is their standard MOTD. You see some instructions here about RW and RO. Just a little couple of bash scripts, nothing important, but it makes it easy for you. In this case, this is a fairly beefy machine. but we're running what was supposedly a bit of an operating system. So quad core, you know, machine is running these extra patches here from the vServer project. This is running just two machines. One is a SIP conference server using Asterisk, and the other one's my Edge compile platform. So when I need to compile packages or those sorts of things, I do it up there. This is one of the ISPs that I help maintain. We've played with the MOTD on that. Actually, I think it might be a version Yeah, 3.1, the Sarge. So it's a bit older version of this one here. Has a few more V machines on it.
Yep.
Well, if we were reasonably closely, what Punky generally does is he will track the stable for as long as he can until things become too hard to maintain. He will then switch to testing and call it basically the next version of Debian. So the current version is a 4.1 of Voyage, which is actually tracking a form of testing. Whereas the version 4.0 was tracking Etch. What he does is, he keeps some packages specially compiled. So he changes to some of the build processes. Doesn't actually patch them, just simply changes the build process for them to remove dependencies. So a lot of the time, you know, you'll go install a package and you'll say, well, what the world, we've got this massive package list, when you realize it's just a command line program, but for some reason they've listed every single X library you can think of and all these sorts of things. He'll go in and adjust that package if it's needed. Also, of course, he tracks a much newer version of the kernel, because of course he wants to be able to run all the latest wireless type of thing. Well, why? No. You mean what do I say? Why? For the normal application of that package on a normal big platform, it's perfectly correct. It's just for a cut down platform, it's not. And so why should we enforce our cut down requirements on everybody else? So unless it's obviously something that should be changed, I don't believe he pushes it back. But the source and the built packages are on all of his mirrors and available, so he maintains the GPL. Pardon? Yes, their website, that's right. Actually, that's a good idea. So there's a picture of what's been happening here. There's the RW directory. If I do a find on RO, we can see that there's a directory structure in there of all the things that would have been needed to make this machine boot. And if you then take that and make it in the RW, the contents of that has been copied to RW. RW, of course, will have more in it because as programs start, more PIDs will be created and all those sorts of things. And so we have a few more things in there. And you can also see that there's var log and all those sorts of things in there. And then if you look in, say, the standard, we've got some symbolic links to directories. And that'll happen again even in, have a look, I think. Yeah, that's right, varlib, yeah. There'll be a couple more. So, yes. The adjust time and host name and these sort of a few things like that are actually symbolic links also. I do it. By default, Voyage doesn't have any sort of sophisticated firewalling on it in that sense. I have a preference for using the old init IP tables script with the var run IP tables, var run IP tables 6. And of course you see in the README, this is a bad way to do it, rada, 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 but I like it. So that's the way I do it. File in there, which is the firewall rules. Yeah, it's it. Yeah, Yeah, it's basically. I suppose I should damn have a look at the new current way of doing it and see if I actually like it, but this is the way I like to do it, so, you know. This system, of course, has had all the wireless stuff ripped right out of it. So we've gone and done it, just done a package list and ripped everything out. We keep that on a machine back in my office, which has every single Voyage, the versions we've used on different machines and all those sorts of things just sitting there ready to build a new flash if we need to. No, my experience is that it doesn't cause any problems at all. We literally just run IP tables upgrade. I have never had a problem with it.
Okay, and you don't have to worry about it sort of trying to mount something
right at all? No, what we do is we do a re-RW, and then we do an upgrade. Then we do a remount RO, and we'll get some things that won't let us do that. We'll then go and shut down all the processes, wake them all back up, do an ROW, RO, and we're in business. We can do libc upgrades, everything. I've done them. I mean, in some senses, I've always got my hand in my throat and everything, but yeah, sometimes you've got to do it. Sometimes you've got to do it.
Do you find that the only time you need to tweak the RW is when the top file needs to be copied over, or like, so that when you're upgrading a process, it probably doesn't need to be tweaked?
So the website's in Hong Kong. He has a bit of a store which he started up, selling a few of the embedded Alex boards and that kind of thing. I'll sort of just show you the spec for the latest Alex boards, wherever they are. There. Here we are. Oh no, he's actually got some of the old ones still there. But the actual website is here, which is just a wiki, basically, with talks about the fact that that runs on these different platforms. We stole some of the wording straight from this page here for my slide. He's talking about the new Alex boards and some BIOS issues that we have with these embedded platforms. There's the version 4 that released as a lie. He talks about what sort of things they've patched. He'll quite often take a Ubuntu. I noticed this there, he's taken a Ubuntu base to get the kernel. That kind of thing. This wiki runs in on my server over in Adelaide. Has a lot of information about how you might do different types of installs, PXE, NFS, those sorts of things. And just to prove it, that he does give us the source code, is how does that work? Where do the packages sit? They sit, anyhow, doesn't matter much. But there's different versions of all sorts of things in there that have been specially patched to make them work, or backported, or whatever it might be. A bit like your backports .org website as well, or .deb. So that's the place. There's a lot of them. I'm not sure that bind mounts would be the best scalable solution. I'm sure it's not something, when he first started doing it, I'm not certain that bind was even commonly a known sort of thing. So it's probably a legacy issue as well. The latest servers that I've put together, I've actually stopped doing a lot of symbolic links for the creation of things and started doing a bind in the FSTAB. I don't know. You'd have to ask a kernel developer to see whether a few hundred bind options would be a good thing or a bad thing. I think he'd be saying, so I think the symbolic links are the cleanest way to handle that problem. Anything else? So they can fly. Actually, what I will show you is this is an interesting one. It's running a vServer, but it's also running VMware off of Flash. So, no, it's not the IPv6 one we did, but yeah, there's some patches for IPv6 for the vServer stuff. So I was actually running vServers and VMware on the same machine. And that one is using some bind mounts to throw out code that needs to be out on a read-write partition, which is basically VM crap. But, you know, so that's a, you know, that's a reasonably, well, it's a pain in the neck machine, but, yeah. So, yeah. Can I show?
So with a machine of this size,
yep.
What advantages do you think you
could use? Well, the advantage we get is that it's multi-platformed. If we were to lose a controller system, we've got remote switching on this NKVM. We can get in there and actually look at what's going on. And in the case of a remote hand scenario, where generally the people aren't even not even close to Linux competent, being able to at least get the machine back up in a limp mode and see what's going on, and the machine's sitting in a data center and, you know, halfway across the country, we can actually support that machine in an effective way.
Standard.
Well, yes. I mean, I can show you some. I've got a couple. I can show the embedded side of it. I've got to remember how to do this, and I've also got security problems. Yeah. It's for recoverability. And it just, since moving to it, I have had a lot less problems with machines playing up and not being able to get them back up and either getting in a plane or driving somewhere. Generally, I can say, power cycle it. And because we're running extended 3 and those sorts of things, generally we can find out, hey, this hard drive's carked it. We can get the machine back up and running. We can do the thing, and as I say, libATA gives us all sorts of problems. I'm hoping that 2.6.24 will have some patches in it that I've been using in my own systems a little while, and it's become amazingly much better. So.
The only thing with remote upgrades in terms of running two versions of Voyage.NS,
it's a great idea. Up till now, I haven't had the storage room on my flash devices. But now that we're doing the larger ones and the price has dropped so much, I actually very much consider doing it. Because, of course, Grub has some very nice tools in that area, and by having KVM capabilities, we can force a build on a load on a different kernel very easily. Sorry, a different partition table very easily. So that's something I've been thinking about. As soon as I do this, I'm going to be showing a password that I shouldn't be showing. I wanted to be able to show you an embedded platform. Can you think of another one I might be able to get onto that's actually doing the job of a router or something like that? That's a bit hard to get into as well. So, no, I can't actually show you easily a proper embedded platform using one of these. Just take my word for it. We have got a couple of them actually running quite nicely, and I know of a wireless company in South Australia uses a Voyage platform that I put together, and they just simply copy the thing from one CF to the next and just put it out there and change the host name and a few IP address things, and off they go. And I think they've got like 100 or so of these things out there. So, you know, they just don't even think about it. It just works.